Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. On today's show, a day at the beach celebrates Disability Pride Month in Queens County, Nova Scotia.
We happen to get an absolutely perfect day for it.
I'm doing it again if I had to.
It's amazing, actually. It's really nice. I'm with friends. We're doing some amazing art here down the beach, and it's just a really fun experience.
Same province, but further out, a blue whale was spotted off the coast of Inganish. Whale watchers amazed at the 90-foot-long mammal.
They say their hearts can get up to the size of a small car, like a Volkswagen Beetle, and that their arteries are wide enough for a small child to swim through.
In British Columbia, Texada Islands residents say they are devastated by the death of Tex the grizzly bear. Tex was found shot dead about a week ago.
Everybody seems to want to live in nature here, but nobody seems to want to live with nature. I will not stop being a voice for bears. I will come again to Texada Island, and we will be prepared, and we're not going to make the same mistake, and I will be their voice.
And a replica of a 19th century ship built in St. John finds a permanent home on the city's waterfront.
St. John was the home of the Loyalists, and so these exiled American refugees had shipbuilding skills. The demand was there. The port is ice-free. And it's probably the only city in Canada that has a huge river system with wood and is on the ocean. So we started building ships.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello, welcome. Thanks for being with us again this week. My name is Boris Chassagne, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. It's time to take some time off and to enjoy the coastal waters and winds of the Nova Scotia beaches. That is where some 50 clients and staff from the Queen's Association for Supported Living, or QASL, took advantage of a perfect beach day as they are celebrating Disability Pride Month in Queens County. The QASL organization, which offers a residential, vocational, and day programs for people with various disabilities, asked Liverpool artist Jane Stevenson to help them create some sand art on the Beach Meadows Beach to commemorate the month. Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, kicked off his sneakers and strolled along the sand to meet up with them.
It was a great beach day on Tuesday in Queens County, and about 50 clients and staff from the Queens Association for Supported Living took full advantage of it to celebrate Disability Pride Month. QASL asked Liverpool artist Jane Stevenson to help them create some sand art on Beach Meadows Beach to commemorate the month. Stevenson has created memorable sand art installations before, like her tribute to Olympic shot putter Sarah Mitten for the 2024 Paris Games. QCCR spoke to some people on the beach to find out what Tuesday's event was all about.
My name's Kelly Oxner. I'm the manager of Penny Lane, which is the day program for Queens Association for Supported Living. We're a dual agency where we provide residential supports as well as a day program support. July is Disability Pride Month, where we celebrate everybody's abilities. And here at QASL, we do it on a day-to-day basis, but we love to bring it out into community. So last year, we did a community barbecue at Queen's Place. We like to take the regional areas and really see how they are for accessibility. So today we're down at Beach Meadows Beach with Jane Dunlop-Stevenson, who is teaching us about sand art. This actually was Shanine, who is one of our program instructors. It was her wonderful idea. As many of us have seen, Jane loves to celebrate different things that are happening in our community by doing her beautiful sand art. And Shanine thought it would be a wonderful way for us to PR who we are and what we do and who we support. Today you're going to see some individual stick men, where we're going to get people to sign their names underneath of them. We have the Disability Pride logo and the Queen's Association for Supported Living, the QASL logo, and just some things that make you think of summer. Sun and flowers and everything that makes you happy.
I'm coming that way, so maybe...
I'm Jane Stevenson, and I'm leading the beach drawing with these lovely people. We came down early, drew some outlines, and then the gang's going to take the rakes and fill them all in, and then I'll take a drone shot of it all. We happen to get an absolutely perfect day for it, so picking a day and having it happen like this is amazing.
Yeah, it's fun. They asked, and it's really fun to share it and show other people that you don't need artistic talent to do it. Anybody can do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll let you get back to it.
All right. I'll finish it up. Thanks.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
You too.
Shanine Corkum. I am a program instructor in community-based employment at Riverbank General Store. I had been following Jane's sand art for a while, and I thought Disability Pride Month being July and a beach day seemed like a perfect fit, and so I reached out for her, and she's got a great following, and I thought, you know, using her platforms, it might get the Disability Pride message out there beyond our networks. I think it's really great. I mean, I think that seeing the beach from a disability perspective has enlightened some folks on what could be for improvements for the accessibility side of the beach. But overall, we've made it work, and everybody seems to be enjoying themselves.
Alexander Owen Trankel, Liverpool, Nova Scotia. I'm a Pride member of Penny Lane Enterprises for Support of Living. And I also work with Terry and Miller with contracts. If it wasn't for the staff of QEL for Support of Living, I wouldn't have this lovely job that I have now. I did a snowman.
Is this the first time you've done anything like that?
Yes.
What did you think?
I'm doing it again if I had to.
Ready? Go to jam it.
My name is Rebecca Mall. I'm helping out with QASL for a Disability Pride event happening at the beach. It means being seen, heard, and included in my community. It's amazing, actually. It's really nice. I'm with friends. We're doing some amazing art here down the beach, and it's just a really fun experience.
So today, part of this, Jane has also very kindly brought her drone, and she's going to do the above pictures when we're all done, and we'll continue to use it as a PR tool, and I hope it's just going to be one more thing that people in our community are going to say, look at the great things that are done at QASL.
Hi, I'm Rick Conrad.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're attuned to Viewpoints.
Local news nationwide.
From the beach to the open waters of Nova Scotia, where a magnificent blue whale was spotted off the coast of Inganish last week. About a dozen passengers aboard the Inganish whale-watching tourist boat saw the large marine mammal surface before quickly showing its colossal tail. Captain Jacob Whitty reports that it was roughly 90 feet long, about the length of three telephone poles, imagine that. Whitty says his passengers were in awe of the rare sighting. They hadn't seen one since 2014. Jacob's sister, April Whitty, quickly recorded a video of the blue whale, and as of today, it has been viewed more than 122,000 times. Bill McCouche in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
Some scientists say it's the biggest animal, including dinosaurs, to ever call the Earth their home. A Northern Cape Breton family's video of a blue whale is getting a lot of traction online. About a dozen passengers and crew spotted the large marine mammal off the shores of Inganish last week. Captain Jacob Whitty of Inganish Whale Watching Tours says it was about 90 feet long, which is about the length of three telephone poles.
They say their hearts can get up to the size of a small car, like a Volkswagen Beetle, and that their arteries are wide enough for a small child to swim through. The babies at birth are up to 26 feet long.
He tells Coast Radio the passengers were in awe.
Everybody was cheering. A lot of people were very happy, saying I made their day and stuff like that. It was a very happy reaction, and a lot of people were spitting out some facts that even I didn't know about them, such as the babies at birth are up to 26 feet long, stuff like that. They're massive, massive creatures.
His mother and part owner of the company, Susan Whitty, says her daughter April took the video that is making quite a splash online, and as of today, it has more than 122,000 views.
She took some video for us with her phone. She got some incredible footage there. Of course, it is zoomed in because you have to stay a respectable distance from whales when you're out there, but the footage she got is incredible. And so she posted that on social media, and it has taken off, which we're thrilled with. with for not only for ourselves as operators, for the other operators in the area, and for Cape Breton, for the rest of the world to see what we have here and what they can come and enjoy.
She says seeing whales is a normal part of their job. It's still an incredible experience for the operators and the passengers. They hadn't spotted a blue whale since 2014.
It's an absolutely amazing experience. Anytime we go out and see whales, it's a fantastic experience to begin with. I always say it's like fireworks. No matter how many times you see them, you still ooh and ah when you see a whale break the water. It's just amazing. So to see the blue whale is just a huge bonus.
By law, a vessel must stay at least 100 meters away from whales, but the roughly 30-second video shows the massive sea creature surfacing before it gives a glimpse of its large tail.
Malcolm, hold on to this. Malcolm, hold on to one of these.
Whoa! Oh, it's whoa! They're just so part of his tail.
They very rarely do that.
Susan Whitty says other exotic whales, including ones local to the Arctic region, made their way to Cape Breton in 2018.
A few years ago, we had beluga whales in the area, and they stayed around for about 3 weeks, and that was another really exciting time for us because they're not native to the area. They don't usually come, but there was two juvenile ones that got astray and ended up here and hung around for a couple of weeks, so that was amazing. So any day you go out there, you never know what Mother Nature will reveal to you, and it's always a thrill.
A video of the blue whale, as well as photos of other marine animals, are available on the Inganish Whale Watching Tours website for the Local Journalism Initiative for Wincushion.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
Happy stories of nature on the East Coast. On the West Coast, meanwhile, there was some sad news coming out of British Columbia, where Texada Island's residents say they are devastated by the death of Tex the grizzly bear. Tex was found shot dead on Tuesday, July 15. The grizzly swam to the small island from Powell River in late May, following two relocation attempts from coastal communities last September. And the community is quite angry. Texada resident and environmental advocate Katrin Glenn Bittner can't understand why this happened. She says the BC government is partially to blame for their lack of action, choosing not to relocate the bear a third time, despite plans proposed by three collaborating First Nations. After the bear was found dead, Randy Neal, Minister of Water, Land and Resource Stewardship, and MLA for Powell River Sunshine Coast released a statement revealing the ministry was supporting these plans behind closed doors. This claim is supported by a statement from the Tlahamin Nation. They even took custody of Tex's remains and held a ceremony to honor the spirit of the grizzly bear. Heather Watson in Nanaimo, British Columbia.
This is a community that hasn't had any predators for many, many, many years. And it's a community completely unprepared for a predator as such as a grizzly bear, with all the attractants everywhere.
On July 15th at 11:42 a.m., the Conservation Officer Service, or COS, posted to social media that the grizzly bear who had taken up residence on Texada Island was found shot dead. The results of the necropsy have yet to be shared, and the identity of the shooter has not been made public. The bear, nicknamed Tex by local resident and advocate Katrin Glenn Bittner, had been on the island since late May.
On May 25th, Tex has swum over from Powell River to Texada Island. And I knew instantly. At first I was excited, and then I was like, in the same second, I knew this was not going to be good due to the community.
Glenn Bittner says that the lack of awareness on the island meant many attractants, things that would draw the bear, were left out. Anything from bird feeders to unsecured garbage to unlocked vehicles. She says that even livestock on the island is not protected the way it is in areas that regularly cohabitate with predators like grizzly bears.
I basically started being a voice for Tex when, as soon as I heard there is a kill order on him, I've become his voice. On June 1st, I have opened up a Facebook page called Save Tex, the Texada Island Grizzly Bears, and I spoke about myself. I spoke about the community. I have tried to educate the people about bears. I have tried to educate people about around their property. There was just zero awareness on Texada Island of coexistence with a grizzly bear.
Glenn Bittner says that bears hold a special place in her family. Her brother, Dr. David Bittner, is a biologist, bear researcher, photographer, and speaker. Glenn Bittner spent several weeks with her brother in Alaska observing a dense population of brown bears. She says she also learned to coexist with bears while working with livestock on farms and ranches in BC.
I really got to see bears, their behavior, everything, the way they're misunderstood, the way they're, everything gets misinterpreted. And they are so forgiven. They are so, they're most amazing teachers. And we can learn so much from them if we just want to.
Glenn Bittner shares what the reaction was when the community learned of the death.
When we found out of the death of Tex, the community is absolutely devastated. It broke many, many people's hearts, and this was inevitable, 100%. This was absolutely, this should have never come to this, and the ministry has failed us and have failed Tex the most.
Glenn Bittner details how she learned of what happened to Tex earlier this week, first with a tip from a friend that the bear had been injured on Monday.
On Monday, I received a phone call from a friend of mine that was out in an area on Texada Island, and she has been stopped by the RCMP to make her aware that there is a wounded grizzly bear, and the wound was caused by a gunshot, and they didn't know where he was. And to make her aware, she phoned me. I phoned the RCMP right away. And they have made a statement with me, and they confirmed with me that the bear has been shot at. He is being wounded. They couldn't confirm the seriousness of the wound, and we made it public on social media. And several hours, or maybe 4 or 5 hours after that, a confession has been made by the shooter that has destroyed Tex on Sunday evening with 6 gunshots that tried to hide the body for 24 hours. And that it got confessed, and he needs to be held accountable now. This was totally legal. This was, Tex has always been a respectful bear, very respectful bear. For the people that were afraid of Tex, just his presence feared him, feared them. So most people that have seen Tex on Texada Island misinterpreted the encounters with him and did not get to see the true, beautiful, gentle bear he was.
Glenn Bittner explains that she is confident in calling Tex a gentle bear, as she feels none of the encounters could be described as aggressive, or they would have ended completely differently. There was only one report of a livestock encounter, which the Conservation Officer Service investigated and released the following statement. Quote, on June 10 and 11, 2025, on Texada Island, conservation officers responded to a complaint of a grizzly bear chasing livestock. The COS investigation determined no livestock were attacked and conflict prevention advice was provided to residents, end quote. Glenn Bittner says that the government is in part responsible for the death of the bear due to a failure to act.
The fear-based narrative spread from people here, including the government through COS, was intense. It was pure hatred against these animals, and it was truly split. 30% of Texada residents wanted this bear destroyed, and lots of people wanted to see him translocated. We had, since the 9th of June, we had everything organized for Tex. This is over a month as of right now, that we had a home that has been greatly offered from Chief John Powell from the Mamalili Kulu territory, that he would like to give Tex a home, and the fundings were there, everything was organized, and there has been silence. The government, the ministries would not approve this plan for a translocation that was basically set up from bear biologists, leader bear biologist, and Chief John Powell with the First Nation.
The 30% statistic mentioned comes from an informal survey held on an online messaging board popular among Texada residents. Communication from the COS prior to the death of the grizzly detailed 2 previous relocation attempts of this same bear twice in September of 2024, first from Gibson's, then from Seashelt. The statement declared in no uncertain terms, quote, in this case, it would not be in the interest of public safety to relocate the bear a third time, end quote. Despite this public statement, it seems plans were taking shape behind the scenes to move the bear after all. On Tuesday, following the COS post confirming the death of the bear, a statement was released by Randine Neal, Minister of Water, Land and Resource Stewardship, and MLA for Powell River Sunshine Coast. The statement included the following, quote, the timing is especially unfortunate as we were actively working with First Nations on a new plan to attempt to capture and translocate the grizzly bear from Texada Island to a remote area up the coast, far away from communities. This was done in partnership with First Nations who had come forward and requested this approach, end quote. quote. A statement from the Tla'amin Nation on Wednesday supports the claim that plans were in place to relocate the bear. Quote, a coordinated relocation effort between the Sechelt, Tla'amin, and Homolko First Nations was already underway when Tex was illegally shot, maimed, and killed. The plan, which had been approved by conservation officials, involved setting traps to safely move Tex to a remote area at the head of Butte Inlet. We are deeply saddened by this outcome. Tex's life mattered, and our nations had come together in a good way to find a peaceful solution. End quote. The statement also shared that the Tla'amin Nation took custody of the remains and held a ceremony on Tuesday to honor the spirit of the grizzly bear. Whether knowledge of the secret relocation plan would have stopped the shooter from taking Tex's life is unknown. Glenn Bittner says this was not the first attempt on the bear's life.
There was, like I said, the 30% people that wanted him dead, but there was also the people that just wanted to be heroes. He has been shot at last Monday, a week ago, missed. He has been chased with two ATVs, where we've seen the videos afterwards with him panting, obviously in distress. And with the shooting that destroyed him was knowing his behavior and no interest in livestock. This was just pure. This was not out of self-defense, 100%. And it was not. He was known to be wanting to shoot the bear.
Glenn Bittner says that the community needs to learn to adapt so that the same scenario is not repeated again.
We need to be proactive on Texada now, more so than ever. Even with Tex being gone now, we cannot stop to be proactive to make this island that we can welcome a bear and be ready for him, and that it will not repeat itself again, because it was unacceptable what happened with Tex.
Glenn Bittner says that she and her brother, Dr. David Bittner, as well as wildlife advocate Ellie Lam, will be working further to educate the community and alleviate the fear of bears.
Especially our youth, that we teach them just like we taught them how to cross a road safely, how to be with wildlife. It's respectful living in nature, respectful with yourself, being respectful to your surroundings.
Glenn Bittner says it is time for everyone to pause and open their eyes, to observe a different perspective on wildlife and learn from animals without fear.
Everybody seems to want to live in nature here, but nobody seems to want to live with nature. I will not stop being a voice for bears. It will come again to Texada Island, and we will be prepared, and we're not going to make the same mistake, and I will be their voice.
Such a sad story, thanks to Heather Watson.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
And to close this edition of Viewpoints, we stay on course and stick to our plan to breathe the seashore winds. However, we now move back east to St. John, where the replica of a 19th century ship finally found a permanent home on the city's waterfront. It's the 1/3 scale replica of the Marco Polo, a clipper ship built in St. John in 1851. It does look a bit weird right now, sitting on its cement home on Long Wharf in St. John Harbor, but the project is not fully completed yet. Check out the photo on frequencynews.ca. The idea for the construction of the replica arose almost 40 years ago. That's when the Marco Polo project was formed to fundraise and construct the replica of the original, which ultimately ran aground off Prince Edward Island. The main structure of the replica was built around a decade ago, and it has been looking for a permanent home since. With the mass yet to be added, president of the Marco Polo project, Barry Ogden, spoke with journalist Iono Ko in St. John, New Brunswick, about the lengthy process of getting the replica built and moved to its final location, as well as the history of the original ship itself.
When I was a kid, I was always interested because I had family way, way back. And then when I was going to university, UNB St. John, I wrote a very long paper on the history of the harbor and the Marco Polo and the Golden Age of Sail, which St. John was the third biggest in the world. And so I started gathering some people together and wondering if I could, if we could build this ship. And then I traveled to Ottawa to have the harbor and the ship and the Golden Age of Sail declared of national historic significance. I got the Marco Polo declared from the research that I'd done and the Golden Age of Sail. And that led to a monument which we took the significance of it, and we went to the National Film Board and we got $1 million documentary out of it. They produced it, of course, and you can still buy that. The QR code's on the site of the Marco Polo. And then we started designing it. We were going to design a full-size ship, which would be longer than the Canada Games Stadium and taller than the City Hall. We went down to a 1/3 size, which is still very big. And we just moved it last weekend to his permanent home on the waterfront in St. John.
Could you tell me a little bit about the history of the original ship and about St. John and its shipbuilding history?
St. John was one of the world leaders in building tall ships, and part of that we can thank Napoleon. He cut the British off their wood supply from Russia, Sweden, and Norway, and then they had to turn to someone who had wood, a river system. St. John was the home of the loyalist, and so these exiled American refugees had shipbuilding skills. The demand was there. The port is ice-free, and it's probably the only city in Canada that has a huge river system with wood and is on the ocean. So we started building ships, and then the golden age of sail, where people were moving around the world in large numbers and product was moving, and we became the third busiest in the world. The Marco Polo sailed for 32 years. Most tall ships sailed for 10. She went around the world in 5 months and 21 days, which was astounding.
I understand that it has been built for some time now, but it took some time to actually reach its final location. How was that process in terms of actually finding a place to keep it and display it?
It was the Port of St. John that helped us. They got us a spot and on the waterfront. And, you know, we've been approached about other spots, but we wanted to be on the waterfront. Now, after 40 years, we have a home, and we're adding things to it. We're going to be adding a dock and the masts. And the masts are going to go right down into the ground. So we've had a lot of gifts in kind. Like last weekend when we moved, would have been about $40,000 with the two cranes and the six trucks and everything. And that was all donated. You know, I raised a lot of money in the city and over the years, mostly for food banks and kids playing sports. And, you know, you just got to sort of figure out all the little pieces and go at it that way, sort of one chunk at a time.
In terms of the importance of kind of like understanding the history, I mean, why is it important, this replica? Why were you so involved in it?
It's the greatest economic time in the city's history. All the housing that you see, the Victorian homes and 19th century buildings, which we have the largest collection in North America, still a huge draw for tourists, comes from that time period. And that 35, 40 years ago, golden age of sail, the city was just booming. And also, knowing your history, knowing who you are, you know, we see it with everything from Black Lives Matter to gay rights to a community that's economically depressed, that having a sense of who you are builds a sense of pride and confidence and allows you to move on. And I sense at times at St. John's, don't have that pride and confidence, but we do have a lot to be proud of, and that's got to come organically from within. And you see people change their lives by having a sense of who they are and being proud of it. And so being a teacher and a coach for decades, I saw that in kids, and I saw it in people, and realized that, you know, we have much greater potential than sometimes we give ourselves credit for. And then when you get people working together, rallying around something that's positive, you can make change.
This is Iona Coe for the Local Journalism Initiative.
And that's all for us at Viewpoints. Our journalists this week were Bill McCouche, Rick Conrad, Iona Coe, and Heather Watson. Our national editors are Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassagne. Thanks, as always, to you and to the station for keeping us company this week, for giving us a voice. And until next week, ciao.
Thank you. You're listening.